You've probably noticed this, and I've noticed this, that life seems very conditional, right? All of life, I think. I'm gonna try to convince you, but I don't think I have to try too hard on this. There are conditions attached to our lives. If-then statements, right? You know this in your normal life. If I eat this, then I'm going to regret it later, right? Come on, heartburn. It's Super Bowl day. So there's a lot of foods you know you shouldn't eat later. You're like, it doesn't matter. Today's a cheat day. I'm frying Oreos at my house. So if you're not doing anything, come to my house. It's so healthy. They're deep fried Oreos. But I know if I eat this, tomorrow's going to be pretty sluggish on the treadmill. I mean, it's just going to be a reflection of that if then. That works for your relationships. Hey, if I talk to my friends, then they'll keep talking to me. If I don't, then they won't. Right? You've experienced that. It's in your work. If I go to work, then I get paid. If I don't go to work, then I don't get paid. I remember first learning about if-then statements in math class, which I always thought was interesting. Do you remember that? It was just me, like the integers and like this and then the greater than sign and if-then and then the little if-then. And I remember in eighth grade sitting there thinking this just profound thought of an eighth grader. This applies to a lot more than numbers, right? If-then applies to a lot more than just a number. It applies to every part of our lives. If I do this, then these are the results. Hey, if you don't eat your dinner, then you don't get dessert, right? Some of you know that, right? Hey, if you don't get out of bed, then you're going to be late. If you don't play nice, then you can go to your room. These are the if-thens in my house, right? As my wife tells me a lot, right? And we use it for our kids, right? If you don't play nice, then you can just go to your room. It's constant if-then. See, you're used to if-thens. And as you consider all your relationships around you, friendships, work relationships, business relationships, social media relationships, all of these relationships carry with them an if-then, right? Because you've experienced that. You've experienced when the if didn't come through, then the then looked a little different. You're used to that in all of those relationships. Now, what we've been doing for the past couple weeks is we're talking about something called home. We're talking about having these homes that please God and are attractive to others. The houses that you like to go to as a kid, because there was something about the smell, there was something about the atmosphere, there was something about the way people treated each other there that made you lean in and say, that's different, that's a little attractive. We're looking at that for these past couple weeks. And the first week, we discovered that a home that is attractive that way uses this kind of love, a for love. See, we're used to a from love. What can I get from you? Hey, I'll love you if then. What can I get from you? But we discovered the love of Jesus. It says, I love you for you. I love you in spite of you, despite what you do. I'm going to keep on loving you is our foundation. Now, this week and next week, we're going to get a little bit more specific on the relationships that could exist in your home. Now, I understand as we talk about specifics, there's opportunity for people who don't fit in the specifics to check out and check into Facebook or Instagram. Okay, I get that. It's your Bible app, but you're going to be checking social media. I want you to hang with me, because this is going to apply to everyone today. Everyone's going to get something out of this. But the first relationship we're going to look at that could exist in a home is a relationship that Paul brings up in the book of Ephesians that we've been reading through. And it's a marriage. It's a marriage. Some of you are saying, okay, I'm not married. I don't want to get married. I've been there, done that. Don't want to do it again. We land on different spectrums of this. But I want you to see this is going to impact every single one of us. And here's how if-then impacts marriage. You are used to using if-then in your other relationships. With your kids, with your friends, social media, acquaintances, people at Starbucks. Wherever it is you engage with people, if-then seems to work. But when if-then enters a marriage, it gets really messy. When if-then enters a marriage, when conditions enter a marriage relationship, it just gets really messy. Way messier than when an if-then is in a friendship, way messier than when an if-then is in a parent-child. There's something about that if-then entering in a marriage which makes it really, really messy. Now, let me tell you something about you that you already know if you're married. On your wedding day, you said these two words to the person that you married. Now, maybe you didn't use these words exact. You kind of wrote your own or you said some form of this. But for me, August 1st, 2009, these were the two words I said to my wife. I do. Right? You said that to someone if you're married before. I do. Meaning what? I do no matter what. In sickness and in health, when we got money, when we don't got money, there's a lot more of that one. Right? Whatever it is, doesn't matter. I do. I do. And she said, I do to me. And what we meant behind I do was I do no matter what. There's no if-then here. There's no conditions. We are entering into a fancy word, be a covenant, a promise. I promise. I do. Now, here's what may have happened between your wedding day and your February 4th, 2018 day. Those two words turned into four words. They went from two to four. And here's what happened somewhere along the way. And maybe it was because kids entered the picture. Maybe it was because of family. Maybe it was because of experience. But somewhere along the way, there is this potential for two to go to four. And it went from I do to I do if you. I do if you. That's when the condition enters. Hey, I do if you. If you come home on time, there's a hot meal waiting for you. If you don't come home on time, there's a cold shoulder waiting for you, right? You said you would and you didn't again, and so I'm definitely not. And I picked up the kids last time, and now it's your time to do it. I do if you. It was I do no matter what, and that's what you thought, and that's what you said, and that's what you signed up for. But somewhere along the way, conditions entered the picture, and suddenly it went, I do if you. And people started keeping score, and people started keeping track. And man, we are good at history lessons with our spouses. You remember that time during lunch, right? It was 6 years ago, but I remember. I have paperwork. I have pictures to show what you said you would do, and you still have it. Because I do turned into I do if you. And when conditions enter a marriage, the marriage starts to fall apart. And what was once a covenant, a promise, becomes a contract with terms and agreements. And suddenly it seems like, hey, this is fair, 50-50. Marriage is 50-50. Marriage is not 50-50. You know it's 50-50? Divorce contracts. Right? 50-50. You take your share, I take my share. That's what that leads to, falling apart. But marriage is 100-100. Marriage, what you wanted on your wedding day is I do no matter what. I do in spite of what you do, no matter what you do. It doesn't matter if I take out the garbage every time, I'm going to keep doing it. It doesn't matter what time I come home, I'm going to keep doing it. I do. But somewhere it turned into I do if you. And when it comes to having homes that are attractive, that are pleasing God, I do if you with a marriage just doesn't fit that. Because you've been in a home where there's kind of an I do if you going on between a husband and wife. Like, what is all the tension here? It's so weird. I mean, all he did was ask for another biscuit. Why did she throw it at him? And you have no idea, but you've experienced that before. Because there's an I do if you going on there. Right? I know for my wife and I, when we lean into I do if you, our kids experience it, our friends experience it, people coming into the home experience it. It's a little more tense. There's a little more awkward. So we've got to talk about this today, because if you're leaning into a home that's going to be pleasing God and attractive to others and you are married, man, you've got to stop and say, okay, did I do turn into I do if you? It's important. Now, if you're here and you're single, you're dating, you're engaged, you land somewhere there, no wedding day, haven't said the words, don't know yet, this is great for you, because before you say the words, you need a foundation. Right, married people, how great would it be if you knew from the start, okay, I do is going to turn into I do if you. If I can have this on my radar, I can have some, you know, little head of the game there. So if you're single today and you land there, you're saying, okay, this, where does this fit in? This is your foundation. This is for you to store somewhere. And when you meet that person or if you're with that person, it's okay, we're going to make sure I do stays I do, not I do if you. And if you're here and you say, okay, well, I'm single, don't want to get married, or I've been there, I don't want to again, where does this fit in? There is a picture of marriage that applies to all of us. You've got to hang with me for another 10 minutes before we get to your picture, but I'm telling you, it's worth hanging with me, because marriage is across the board. The picture that we see that Paul gives us of what marriage is, it applies to every single person. So stay with me, okay? But this matters. This matters because you have friends who are married. This matters because you go to people's homes who are married. And maybe today you're going to leave here with a little more understanding as to why she gets so mad when he came home late again. and why he's so frustrated when she said she would, but she hasn't. Because I do can easily turn into I do if you. But there's a way to guard against it. There's a way to keep our marriages landing in what you wanted. Because when you got married and he said, I do, you didn't sign up for record keeping. Come on, you didn't think he was going to remember every time you didn't. And you didn't think she was going to keep score. That's not what you wanted. You didn't want someone looking over your shoulder. You wanted someone who said, I do no matter what. Something happened. So we're going to turn to the words that Paul writes for us in Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 5, this is actually where we've been for the past 2 weeks. We're going to stay here for next week. But Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21, Paul's going to give us some insight into this. Now, before we read, disclaimer, the text we're going to read, you may have heard before at some point. In fact, some of you stopped going to church because you were in a church that read this text. You're like, I can't do that. I mean, this is 2018. This is not 100 years ago. It's not 200 years ago. Hang with me. Don't debate me in your head yet, okay? Just wait till the end, and then we can debate in your head. You're going to win the argument in your head. It's your head, not mine. All right, but just hang with me. Because I don't want you to fall into a place where you start selling your love instead of giving your love. That's what happens. Oh, well, I love you if. That's a sale. It's a transaction. It's a contract. Look what Paul says here. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21. It's a dangerous word. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. We're going to pause there. Because what Paul does here is he's getting ready to do some fine details on his painting. Before he does, he's doing broad strokes with this verse. He's just putting some happy trees on that thing, right? Happy trees, just a couple happy trees. This is broad strokes. It's just, this is where we're landing. Don't miss the broad stroke that he starts off with. Because before he goes fine details in the verses to follow, and he starts breaking down, hey, for wives, it's this. For husbands, it's this. And then he goes into, for parents and children, it's this. Children, that's a new word, right? Before he goes there, he puts a big stroke on it. Says, everything I'm about to say as it relates to wives to husbands to wives, parents to children, children to parents, here's what you need to know. Here's the happy tree. Submit to one another. To one another. This is mutual submission. This isn't based on your race, your gender, where you are in the home. Paul is going to break down detail, but before he does, don't miss it. It's mutual submission. It is one another. It is wives to husbands, husbands to wives, parents to children, children to parents. He's painting a picture here, and if you miss the broad stroke, the fine details are going to look really messy. Some of you have experienced messy fine details as it relates to the different relationships in the home. That's because you missed the broad stroke. Mutual submission. Submit to one another, to one another. Now, next week, let me just throw a disclaimer out here. Next week, we're going to talk about parents and children. Now, if you're, again, hey, I don't have kids, that's not how we're looking at it. So come back next week because we're going to talk about how children relate to parents, which I know all of you are a child of someone because you're sitting here today. And it's not just, well, my parents aren't here, I don't know them. We're going to talk about that. You want to be here next week for parents and children. But we're going to focus on the two things Paul breaks down immediately after this week and pick that up next week. And it's wives to husbands, husbands to wives. Okay, so here's what he says. So submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. The next verse, for wives, this is where he gets details. This means submit to your husband as to the Lord. Now, I said my wife and I, we got married in 2009. We met in 2005. I was 15. You guys can awe that if you want. We were kind of those high school, like, oh, they like each other. And so I was 15 going on 16. And that summer of 2006, we were doing what 16, 17-year-olds would do, try and get our license, right? Driver's ed. That's what the summer looked like for us. We want to drive so I can stop asking my dad to drive me to my girlfriend's house. That's not cool. And drop me off at the mall. I need a license. So I remember we were sitting in the backyard and we were studying for our driver's ed class. And I remember trying to memorize these signs that I've seen before, but they didn't matter then because I was just in the car. But now I need to remember, like, okay, what shape is that? And what colors does that mean? And I'm going to just vent for a minute, can I? Okay. There are some signs out there that I think are pointless. Okay. Now, look, if you're in highway, it's not you, it's the sign. So calm down. But there are some signs that I'm like, look, do I need to know that there are deer coming up? It's Long Island. There's deer everywhere. I mean, it's cute. There's a deer on that sign. It doesn't tell me what to do. All it says is the chances of you getting hit are way higher for the next couple miles, even though you can get hit anywhere. So there's some signs that they really don't impact what's going on. And then there are signs that really make a difference as you navigate the road. One of them that I think is kind of underrated is the yield sign. Yield sign's not exactly a stop sign because there's an option there for you. A yield sign says this: you're coming up to the yield sign, and so you have the same rights as the person who's traveling this way on the road. Usually it's kind of exit ramps, right? You've got the same rights. You are in the car, they are in the car, but because there's a yield sign for you, you are going to choose to say, even though I have the same rights as you, I am going to slow down and be prepared to stop. Why? To avoid a crash, to avoid an accident. It doesn't stop you from your rights. I mean, if you want to bypass the sign, you can do that. Just might not end well. A yield sign isn't you have to stop here. It's, hey, the best way for you to navigate this would be if you slow down and maybe even stop. That way there's no head-on collisions. Now, listen to that in light of what Paul writes here. Because he just said, can we go back to that other slide, Rachel, the one before that? The big thing is submit. I think he's repeating himself. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Okay, Paul, next sentence. And he says, for wives, this means submit to your husbands as to the Lord. He just said that. Paul just said, okay, submit to one another. Okay, for wives, it means submit to your husband. Yeah, we got that. But for some reason, when we miss the broad stroke of what Paul puts there before the fine detail, we get all turned over and all upset and, hey, this isn't right, and how come I have to, and why doesn't he have to? No. There's mutual submission. And now he gets a little specific and says, for wives, let me just bring this home a little more. It means you submit to your husband. The reason why we get upset is because we're used to I do if you. And anytime I've got to pump the brakes on my rights and I'm used to a conditional relationship, it doesn't sit well with me. Because now I'm used to, no, I will if he does. And if he doesn't, there's no way I'm submitting. I'm not respecting him because you're used to I do if you. And we get all upset. Now, it's 2018, and we get a little kind of anxious over this. When Paul wrote this 2,000 years ago, you know, no one batted an eye at it. Culturally speaking, it was like, yeah, Paul, we're already doing that. I mean, we're already treated in that way. We're already submitting. They weren't getting upset. In fact, what Paul goes on to say next about husbands, that would have caused the church uproar. Because they're like, yeah, we're already submitting our husbands. I mean, we love them. We're yielding. This is how we're navigating our relationship. But you've got to see, if you want a home that attractive, that atmosphere, that pleasing to God, Paul is outlining, okay, well, this is what it looks like as wives relate to husbands. There's a yield sign there. My wife has the full equal rights that I have. And yet there are times where she says, you know what, to avoid a head-on collision, I'm going to yield. Now, the reason why she does that is because of what follows. See, some of you think, okay, this is what I've been taught. You know, it's oppressive. It is chauvinistic. It is sexist. How dare Paul do this? Because we got this picture of this guy just sitting there, and a genie shows up, and all of that happens, and the feet are up, and hey, bring me a sandwich, and make me this, and clean that. That's the cultural picture we have, where the man is just sitting there doing his thing, yelling into the kitchen, yelling into the lit, whatever it looks like. That's not what Paul's talking about, because look at the next thing he tells husbands. Picture that dude on the couch with the lazy boy and his feet up, and then try and apply that to what Paul says here. He says, for husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his life for her. No dude on a lazy boy is giving up his wife, life for his wife. That's not the image that Paul is painting here. You know, Paul spends 3 times more time talking to the husbands in that text than he does the wife. You know why? Because we got the thick head, right? He needs to make sure. You guys, listen up. You didn't hear it the first time. I'm going to tell you again. Specifically, husbands, listen. Why? Because their culture was that lazy boy feet up, just the woman does whatever. Paul's reshaping that as he's writing. No. It's not just you tell any person what to do. Mutual submission, that's the big picture here. What does that look like for husbands? You lay down your life for your wife. You are willing to kill whatever it is that's in you that is causing a problem in the marriage. You kill it. And this isn't just romantic, good for Valentine's Day card language. It sounds, baby, I would die for you. I will do whatever you want. Just not on game night, baby. Just not then. Just tonight, I need 4 hours. Just not there. Just not my spending habits. I mean, I'll kill whatever you want, but this is just my thing, and this is where the money goes, and just not that. And just not my hobbies, not my interests. This is kind of me time. And I love it if you were into it, but you're not, and so I'm going to do this, but just... I would die for you, just not that. That's awkward tension. That's what that pause was. All right, that's awkward laughter. So we're learning things. The problem is this. Somewhere along the way, I do turned into I do if you. And I do if you really elevates me. That's who's at the center of I do if you. It's not I do no matter what. It's I do as long as. Conditional. And if you're not going to submit and you're not going to respect me, you can be sure I'm not going to die for you. I'm not coming home. I'm not doing that. And if you're not going to love me, well, I'm not staying on budget and I'm not spending time with your family and we're not going there. And all of these I do's if you start to enter the picture. Now, how then do we protect? How do we guard this? Because this is easy to read and it's nice for sitting next to each other. But how does this work in real life? But how does it work when a situation comes up and it's, okay, there's the yield sign. Do I slow down or do we go at this? Okay, I've got this part of me I love. Do I kill it or do I keep going? Are we going to keep this as a covenant or is it going to be a contract and there's terms and you've got yours and I've got mine? Let's just try to be together. Paul knows it's not an easy thing because he repeats himself at the end of this. He says, actually, so again, let me just drill this down. So again, I say, and here's where he lands. Each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. And notice what Paul is reminding us of here is that you focus on you. Each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Each man must keep tabs on the wife and when she came home, and each... No, none of that. But that's what happens. We stop looking at what God has called us to do and how we are to mutually submit, and we start thinking about all the times that she didn't and he didn't and she said she would and he said he would and they never did, and that's what's on repeat, and that is a contractual obligation. I do if you. Paul says, no, let me repeat it again. You focus on you. You focus on you. It's an I do no matter what. Now, we kind of skipped over it in here, but every time Paul brought up another element of this relationship, he talks about something vertical. Right? The first one, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Wives, submit to your husband for the Lord. Husbands, love your wives as Christ laid down his life. There's this picture of Jesus entering the relationship. And here's the picture I talked about. So singles, come back in with me here. Because this is the picture of marriage that Paul is referring to. He says, as the scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. Look at this. This is a great mystery, but it is an illustration of the way Christ and the church are one. You know what Paul does there? He quotes God from Genesis. He goes all the way back to the first officiated wedding between Adam and Eve when God was the minister, and God says to them, hey, just as a man leaves his father and mother and you're going to go there and join together, what's he doing? He's quoting God. And then he says, hey, this is why it was set up way back then. It's been mysterious, but now we understand it. Marriage reminds us of Jesus. Marriage is that picture of Jesus loving the church. If you're married now, let that sink in. When you look at your spouse, you are to be reminded of the love that God has for you as demonstrated in Jesus coming to this world. And maybe you're saying, okay, I don't get that. But do you understand God's love for you today? Paul's strategic in saying the church. Now, the church is not a building. The church is a group. It is people who have been changed by the love of Jesus who are now discovering Jesus. There is this beautiful picture that believers understand, that Christians see in marriage, that it's not just here and now, but it is actually pointing me to the love that Jesus has for me. It's why God started way back when. to be this tangible reminder. See, I believe that Jesus said, I do to you long before you did to him. Jesus came to this world and he said, I do long before. He got down on his knee. It's kind of like that awkward prom that you go to where you have to ask the girl to dance. You don't really know how. Like eighth grade, let's go back there. I remember eighth grade formal at my school and it was, okay, I'm going to ask the girl to dance. I have no idea. And then it's that awkward, will you dance with me? Kind of come out to the middle of the floor and ask her to come out. Jesus did that awkward stepping into our world for you. Jesus came into our space. He entered our world to put his hand out and say, I do. I love you. I'm making a way for you to know my love. It is not contractual on your part. It's on what I do. That's the good news of Jesus. Jesus says, this isn't an I do if you. This is an I do for you. I'm going to lay down my life for you. I am going to love you, and my love for you is going to change the way you love. It's going to change the way you live. And our marriage reminds us of that. But when it turns into conditions and it gets broken and it becomes I do if you, we are reminded, man, this just doesn't seem to be the way it's supposed to be. And so what I want you to do this week, you're married, is I want you to think, how strong is the I deserve language in my relationship? Now, some of it you hear, some of it's literally voiced. You hear, you know, it might be mumbled. It might, what was that? What did we say there? Right here. Some of that goes on, under the breath kind of thing. But you know internally, you can feel how strong I deserve is in your home. You could feel it when you come home from work. You could feel it when you leave. You could feel it when you're there. So I want you to take some honest time this week. You're married in your home. How strong is I deserve? Whether it's thought, expressed, or felt. Now, what do we do with that? We remember that if Jesus lived out, I deserve, you and I would not know God. If Jesus leaned into, I deserve, the relationship that you are invited into to know God and discover Jesus, it wouldn't exist. Because if Jesus said, well, hey, I deserve, Jesus isn't going to the cross. It's the last thing he deserved. If God says, I deserve people that always get it right, none of us are landing there. I'm out. I am out of that. God says, I do. No matter what, I do for you in spite of how you do. And so, married people, I want you to think through that this week. You've got your rhythm card there that helps you work through some of that stuff all week long. And if you're single, you're dating, you're engaged, come on, talk to the person if they're around you now. If not, put this in you. You know what? When this day comes, I'm leaning into I do. Because I do if you is going to creep in. Right? I do if you is definitely going to creep in. We have experienced it creep in. You've got to remember the gospel message of Jesus that says, oh, this is way bigger than just between me and her, me and him, whatever it is. No, this is pointing me to God's love for me. And if you're here today, maybe this is the first time you've understood the picture of God's love for you. Would you discover love, discover mercy today? Would you take a step towards the God who is out there in the middle of the dance floor holding his hand out saying, I'm here for you. I want to know you. It's going to be awkward at first. It always is. But discovering is beautiful. And so if it's your first time, second time, or 100th time here, you're saying, I want to take a step towards discovering that love of Jesus. That gray card in that chair in front of you, grab it. There's a spot that says discover Jesus. Start that journey today. Drop it in a box or hand it to me so this week I can email you and celebrate with you as you've responded to Jesus saying, here I am, I love you, I died for you, I want to know you. Start that relationship with him. Now what we're going to do is we're going to remember Jesus laying down his life for us through communion. So I'm going to ask the band to come up here with me and we're going to sing through just a chorus of a song together. But what did Paul say there? Husbands, love your wives. Lay down your life for her as Christ did. We don't believe in Jesus because it's something Jesus taught. We believe in Jesus because it's something Jesus did. Everything about our belief hinges on the resurrection of Jesus, that Jesus died on the cross and rose from the dead. And communion is our reminder of that. Jesus said there were two ways that we're really going to remember him. One is communion, one's water baptism. Water baptism, we symbolize, we remember that burial and that resurrection. And in communion, we remember it is the broken body of Jesus. It is his spilled blood. It is him losing his life. Why? Because Jesus lives out of I love, I do, no matter what, for you. I'm going to pray. Our team is going to sing a song, and then I'm going to lead our time in communion. So would you bow your heads with me? Father, thank you for your tremendous love. Thank you for Jesus, your son, who came to this world, who loves us. Thank you for our marriages that remind us of your love for us, while our relationships can turn to contracts. Your covenant remains the same. And today, in this moment, we remember the I do that Jesus said all those years ago. In his name we pray, amen.